Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
Mr. President.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve, Mr. President.
And this is Streaming Things, the only podcast we're pretty sure that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest film and TV shows available to stream right from your home. In an ocean of streaming networks.
I almost.
Vying for your attention, we are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast, your curators of content.
Yeah, you could just say an ocean of streamable content.
I could.
Let's make it that.
I could just fucking do my job and do it well. But no. But
what is written on the page?
Nothing.
Oh, well, then say whatever you want.
The pen is mightier than the sword, Stephen.
Thank you, Alex.
I'll take the penis mightier.
We've been doing SNL Jeopardy impressions off air for the last 10 minutes.
And it continues. Very excited to bring this episode to your ear hole. Oh, ear holes?
Ear holes.
Ear holes. I just turned into a four-year-old version of myself. My feet are pigeon-toed. I'm waddling around.
Just playing with wiener.
I'm diddling.
I saw a short film where it was a dad playing the "Where'd the baby?" where he's like closing his eyes. And,
classic.
Where's the baby?
Object and then, permanence joke.
And then he finally opens his eyes, and the baby literally is missing. So then, the sketch continues where like all the parents are like showing up on scene and like, "Where'd the baby? Where'd the baby?" And then like the scene is like, "We were looking for the baby." Like everyone's just talking like that.
Like it cuts to a news broadcast.
Yep.
The baby missing.
The baby is still missing. We don't know where he is.
Awesome. They stole that from The Witch, though. Robert Eggers actually did that. Remember?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Anya Taylor-Joy's character is doing that, and then when she looks away, comes back, the baby's gone.
For a second, I was like, I completely missed that part where every character in The Witch was like, "Where'd the baby go?" It's Black Phillip.
That's the director's cut. It's Black Phillip.
That was a goat's name, right?
Yeah, I think so. Was it a goat?
Yes. Some sort of hooved animal.
Some sort of cloven-hooved animal. You know, it could have been a lamb. That's satanic, too.
Yeah.
The Lamb of God, like the band. Mm-hmm. Anywho's on.
The goat of Satan.
That's true. It is typically a goat.
Satan's gecko.
I thought you were going to say Satan is the goat. I was going to say no.
Oh, Tom Brady's the goat.
Yeah, that's true. But right under that.
What do we have in store for today?
Runner up goat.
Where are we going with this?
I'm enjoying this. I tell you what, guys. I've listened to a bunch of movie podcasts to kind of feel out the competition, right? Because I know in the intro I say that we're the only ones we're pretty sure, but... just to pull the curtain back a little bit for the listeners, I know that there are many film guests. So I've been listening
also,
to...
Also, Chris is a liar.
Yeah, that's just to pull the curtain back. I'm a liar. So, I checked out a few and they're not great. And like, obviously the big ones, they're awesome. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people who are very famous on other platforms. I'm not going to name any names because I'm not a dick. And I was just out of curiosity, just kind of checking them out. And I got to say, what we do here on Streaming Things, it takes a little practice. It takes some polish. And I know I'm constantly berating the show. So there's a lot of self-deprecating humor because we try to remain humble, right? But the truth of the matter is, I'm well aware that we're awesome.
That we lick tits.
And some people aren't great. And hats off to Steven. But a lot of people aren't very good at the sound mixing, the sound editing. They don't have the proper microphones, perhaps. So it's sometimes even hard to hear them. I'm not talking about the content of what they're saying, just the overall structure of the podcast needs a lot of work, right? So I'm proud of what we do here. Anyway, I will move on.
Whack feel up.
Whack feel up.
Whack feel up. So today's episode is going to be exciting. We're all eagerly anticipating the premiere of The Batman. And I don't know, I guess they haven't heard from Sean Parker. He didn't tell them yet that it's cleaner without the. So for now, it's going to be called The Batman.
You either call him Batman or the goddamn Batman. Mm.
Drop the. It's cleaner. So in anticipation of that, we're going to rank all of the live action Batman films that have been released up to this point. So we're not going to include the Lego Batman movie or his appearance in the regular Lego movie.
Because we all know those are top of the list.
We're not going to be talking about Mask of the Phantasm or Killing Joke or any of the dozens of animated Batman films that have been released. Just live action only. So we're talking Tim Burton. We're talking Joel Schumacher. And we're talking Christopher Nolan.
And that guy who did Batman vs. Superman. Was that Snyder?
I believe so.
Yeah, that guy. You know, Zach.
Are we going to include Justice League in this?
No.
No?
Okay. I'm thinking standalone Batman films, just to make it cleaner.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I think that leaves 8 films up to be ranked. We'll be doing that in the main event. Of course, you know, of course, we'll do some crossing streams and things like that before we get to that point. I want to start off right off the bat. It's very important to me. It was a bat joke.
Oh, yes. Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Right off the bat. I want to thank all of you listeners for, you know, week in, week out, giving us your attention, your time. You can email us at any time by writing into streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @streamthingpod. You can follow me personally @CMichaelWrights. That's Wrights is in what Shakespeare does. You can follow Andy.
@AndyMostDays, which Shakespeare also is usually William Most Day.
That's true. Also related to the Shakespeare. And Steve.
@SteveMay13, and as we all know, Shakespeare could probably count to 13.
That's true. I think he wrote 13 plays.
Well, there you go.
It's 50-something, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Just short.
Yeah, but divided by 4.
Obvi.
13. And also, if you would like to subscribe to our Patreon to get exclusive content that only cool people get, you can go to patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings. And subscribe at a variety of tiers. Mm-hmm. That's T-I-E-R-S.
You can listen to the bonus episode, which just dropped this week on A Knight's Tale.
That's true. You could listen to that. Yeah. And also you can vote on future polls. There's a lot of polls on there for those people that like those things. So that's something to be excited about. Mm-hmm. Steve, why don't you drop some gratitude on our current grassroots movement early adopter Patreon subscribers.
All right. These Maverick Renegades. I would like to thank Kyle. I would like to thank Elo, Sarah, Jimmy, Daniel, Katie. Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Enza, Carrie, Carmelita. And last but not least, Phil, the innovator of Patreon streaming things. Phil, The first one.
Some spec on his name.
Yeah. Phil, I don't know how I feel about Phil these days.
Yeah, Phil was throwing some shade towards you guys.
Major.
So last week we had the President's Day Jeopardy, and Phil was texting me all week about how infuriating listening to that episode was because he was screaming Mary Todd Lincoln at the top of his lungs at his phone.
Turns out so was TikTok.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's not like everybody knows who Mary Todd Lincoln is, okay? I had a public education, okay?
Okay. So did I.
Did you know who Mary Todd Lincoln was?
Yeah.
Prior to meeting Phil?
I think I probably told Phil about Mary Todd.
You can't prove that.
Me and MTL go back way deep, you know?
MTL. She was on TRL. Our number three video, Mary Todd.
There need to be more.
4 score and 7 years ago.
That's beautiful.
That's the Linkin pop song for anyone that didn't get it.
That's pretty
cool. I always like to think of new listeners like this is their first episode ever. And like at some point in the beginning, they're going to, God, they really love cake specifically. It's an insult to the other Patreon subscribers. And we just breeze past it. We never explain it. I don't even remember why we do that.
I don't either.
To be honest.
It was one of the first times we gave Patreon shout outs. Andy was doing guitar riffs to everyone's names.
Oh, was that that was a Cream in an episode, right?
Yeah, and what Andy kind of belted out was so goddamn funny, just off the cuff. Cake, thank you, cake.
So it goes back to alcohol. That's the roots of loving cake so much.
The root of a lot of things in life.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of things on streaming things.
Yeah. Most of the thing, good music in this world.
Also, you can dial. Most people don't know this. This is a super, what's the word? Exclusive thing that you can do. You can call in to the show and leave a voicemail that we can play on air with your permission or just listen to if you aren't comfortable with that. And you can dial 859-757-4051. That's correct.
We're in America.
We got a voicemail this week, didn't we?
We did.
One that we'd like to share.
We did, yeah.
Drop it on us, Steve.
Hey, guys. This is Steven. I haven't called you in like forever. Yeah, it's been a bit. So a little behind on the episodes and whatnot. But listened to the last few and realized how much I missed you guys. Just finished the Time Loop one. And I had to say that Fringe had a really good Time Loop episode. I don't know if any of you guys see Fringe, but my hot take is that it's better than X-Files, and I've gotten into many an argument about that. But a really, really good, probably the best episode of Fringe is a Time Loop. Really emotional, and it's kind of like a magic trick of an episode when the ending comes. At least I didn't see it coming. So really, really good. Aside from that, yeah, keep up the good work. You guys are awesome. And yeah, season 4 Stranger Things coming out soon. Can't wait. And can't wait to listen to you guys talk about it. Peace out.
Thank you so much, Stephen V. Such a huge supporter of our show.
And I love Stephen the Fifth.
And our voicemail. I mean, he's really single-handedly keeping that fucking thing going.
Yeah, yeah. And he's right. I didn't mention it in the Time Loop episode, but Fringe is really, really great. And it does have an amazing Time Loop.
I own seasons 1 through 6
really?
Of Fringe on Blu-ray. Because I bought Steve's entire collection. So I'd never seen a single episode.
It's really good. I watched like the first season. I thought he was saying Friends on there. And so I'm like,
I'm Friends at a really good Time Loop episode when Rachel like, comes back.
You're such a Monica.
I was like racking my, well, I've never watched like more than an episode or two of Friends, but I'm like, oh my God, did they start going there with that show?
Dude, the last season of Friends gets wild.
So have you seen Fringe, Andy?
Yeah. Like the first season, I think it's really good. It's basic. I think it's another J.J. Abrams created show.
Yeah.
Or at least he's a Orky producer
and Kurtzman,
on it.
Whatever those two guys are, those jabronis.
So, Steve, you owned all seasons on Blu-ray. That's a huge commitment for a television show. You must have loved it.
I did.
Do you agree that it's better than The X-Files?
I think, yeah. I mean, I to be honest, I don't really have a personal stake in either or. I've never finished all of X-Files for personal reasons. I'm scared of little green men, but
as is David Duchovny.
But no, I think Fringe is really, really great. It's basically a really, really good modern day take on X-Files. Well, I say modern day, it's like what, 10 years old, 15 years old at this point.
Right.
Like that. So
I would like to check it out and I have access to it. So, and, I think I will.
Denethor is in it. John Noble is the
wacky scientist,
cocaine addled brain scientist from the 70s who's like not all there anymore, and he has great lines like, who wants some cocaine?
Like, does he eat grapes? Because I can't stomach that again.
Oh, that's the most gory scene in cinema. No,
it is. When Stephen the Fifth brought up another great point, we forgot to talk about it last week. We actually finally were gifted a carrot on a stick from the Duffer Brothers, and got some info as to what's going on with the Stranger Things franchise, the thing that gave this podcast life and has been off the air for almost, I think it'll be 2.5 years, almost 3 years.
Dude, it's been so long. I was like, the who?
Oh, yeah. it'll have been 3 years, because I think 2019 was when season 3 dropped.
That and
it'll
is be insane.
And this season will drop in the first volume. Volume of the season one. Drops in May, right? It's May 25th.
It's been long enough.
May 27th.
27th.
I think to give the fans like the kind of expertise and immersion that they expect from the show as far as Stranger Things content, I'm going to have to binge watch the first three seasons again.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Even though I've seen them three times, I don't think it's going to be enough. Because we're professionals. We can't be like, oh, what's his face from the one scene? We have to know.
Right, for sure. Mr. Clark.
Yeah.
Can he still get it?
I would never forget his name.
Can he still get it?
He can definitely still get it. Certainly. So drop some knowledge on us, guys. What research have you come up with as far as the new Stranger Things info?
So we know that it's being dropped in two batches, a la Ozark. I think the second batch is about to drop. So volume one is coming May 27th, and then volume two is coming shortly thereafter, July 1st. Which I like that. I think that it is a good happy medium for the streaming format.
It's a good compromise.
I hate it that when a really great show comes out and like it just all comes out at once, and it's like everybody just watches it as fast as they can so they can avoid spoilers, and then like it's just gone from the culture at that point, and it's really sad. I like when things have time to stew and I can come up with theories and we can talk, and when we are having a conversation in the podcast, it's not just us in our self-created vacuum trying to avoid everybody else and, you know, getting things ruined for us. Like the only conversation that we get to have with these kind of shows are between us when we're literally sitting down to record in between each episode.
Right.
So I like the idea of having a little bit of time to breathe in between them. I would prefer that they even just do like some streaming networks are doing, like give the first three episodes or so, and then, you know, weekly after that. I'm fine with that too. Just as long as it's not all.
I'm also sad when there's no more after the third one though.
Right.
Cause you're used to the streaming model. Like when Peacemaker dropped all three episodes on the first day and I was loving it. And then I was like, I have to wait a week. No, week. I've waited years for this Stranger Things though. And it's easier on us as a podcast too, because I mean, a lot of people don't know, you know, what we do, a lot of coverage around each season. And in order to do it the way that we want to, we live on the East Coast, so Eastern Standard Time. And so the episodes don't drop until 3 a.m. Where we're at. So in order to do the show the way that we do it, we have to meet up at 3 a.m., watch the first episode, then record an hour, hour and a half discussion about it, then go watch the second episode, and then we talk about it. And we do, and it's exhausting in order to keep up with the listeners, because, you know, you're going to watch it so fast. If you're going to be interested in the podcast at all, that's the only prayer that we have. Mm-hmm. At least that was our thinking the first 3 years that we did this show. So this will be a little more, there'll be some time to rest betwixt the two parts of season four.
And we honestly don't know yet, like, what it's really going to entail. So they in addition to putting out the poster and the two dates drops, they gave us a little bit of deets. We know there's thousands of visual effects guys. That's pretty exciting. There's 9 scripts, 800 pages, and a runtime almost twice the length of any other season. So 9 scripts would have you believe 9 episodes, but with a runtime that is
really long episodes.
Double. Yeah. Every other season has been what, like 8 episodes or maybe 9?
8 or 9, yeah.
So, yeah, are we going to get like 8 or 9 hour and a half episodes, or are we going
to That'd be amazing.
Are we going to get 2 9-hour halves?
True.
You know what I mean? Or 9 episode halves. Are we going to get like an 18 episode season? Might they break things up? We don't know.
We don't know yet.
Well, typically they release the names of the episodes sometime in advance. So maybe in April or so, we'll get some episode titles. And then, of course, we'll know how many episodes. But it's very exciting stuff. I have the full confidence in the Duffer Brothers' ability to bring this baby home.
Oh, we forgot. Did we say yet?
I was going to say the 5-season thing.
Penultimate season.
Yes. So there's going to be 5 seasons of Stranger Things total. And the benefit of having had 3 years on the production of season 4 is that For me, I think Andy feels differently. Andy's always got some hot takes. He's a very smart guy. I'm dumb. But I think it's safe to say for me that season one is the best. And, you know, I like to attribute that to, you know, the decade of preparation that they had prior to that. And then it's the quick, oh, no, the sophomore slump. Oh, we got to do this. So we got to figure out how to top it. You know, sequels always have the issue of how do we do what they love, but different, but bitter, but,
oh, man,
you know,
depending on the day, I go back and forth on season one and season three being the best.
Yeah,
I love season three.
I did love season three. Andy, that's your favorite.
Yeah. Yep. Three. And that's not a slight on season two. That's just season two is like just half a step, not as good as season one.
Yeah.
But it's still great.
For sure. I've loved every season. But I guess what I'm getting at is that having had the extra couple years to really think about where they want this story to work toward, mm-hmm. and you know, all of the pre-production and stuff that they needed, and just really milk it and use it for what it's worth, I'm excited to get some like new heights to what they're able to do.
It's great. Millie Bobby Brown just turned 18 the other day. That's how long the show's been around.
That's insane. Christ. That is insane.
Wild.
We all had completely different homes, completely different life partners, situation. Yeah. I mean,
my former life partner was on one of the review episodes for season three.
Yeah. Mine was just upstairs, but they're both gone.
We had different jobs probably. Or Steve, were you doing
100%
at the time?
I was doing the same thing.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
Sorry, my work life is the only stability I have.
I'm sorry.
Maybe you can just afford me that one thing.
And it's good. That's good.
It's good. I'm so proud of you, Steven.
I was running a bar. What were you doing back then, Andy?
God, I think I was working at the bank.
Yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. I would say so. And Steve was where he's at now. We've already stated that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're all very excited for Stranger Things season four. That's, I think, May 27th and July 1st. Is that what you said?
Yes.
So May 27th, look forward to the old school logo for the podcast and the old music and doing what we do best, finding chocolate puddings and all that stuff. So I'm really excited for that. Thank you to all the listeners for staying with us the last 4 years or so. It's incredible.
Yeah, we might be doing, we have to talk about it in more detail, but we'll probably be doing some sort of, I don't know if it's a re-release is the right answer, but we'll have to kind of get the old episodes up in the top of the stream right before the new season.
I would say that's drops. Not that we need to discuss the behind the scenes business on air, but I think probably that's just going to be the best option rather than, because if we did a re-recording of a recap, that would be the third time we've done that.
Oh no, I wouldn't want to do that. No, I was saying we had to, we would get the episodes that are currently out, but put them at the top of the queue. So if anyone is kind of getting back, oh, streaming things is heating up.
Here's what I'm wondering though. Do you want to re-release individual episode recaps or just the season one recaps that we did, season two recaps that we did?
Oh, we'll just have to talk about that in more detail. But like, I'm just getting the listener kind of cued.
I don't think there is a season. There's no way a season three recap exists. We'd have to do that.
I mean, it could exist. Season three, a recap?
Yeah, we've never done one of those.
Oh.
There wouldn't be one of those to re-release. Ha ha!
Well, we'll just have to wait and see.
We'll just have to watch it again together and talk about it.
Yeah, I plan on watching it all again.
For sure. Samesies. That brings us to our, somehow, just now, first segment, Crossing Streams.
Just jamming.
I wanted to let Andy listen to that for once. Because I wrote that and played that and he loves it. God damn it. Andy did the drums though.
Fuck yeah, I did.
This is our Crossing Stream segment where each week we reminisce about the TV shows and film properties that we've been watching since last we met. Andy.
Yes, sir.
What have you been up to, my friend?
I've been streaming
Regale us.
A whole lot lately. I did. So the other day I told you I was going on a little adventure to reestablish some of my streaming ability for the library and my audiobooks. I've talked at length, ad nauseum, if you will, about Libby before. I recently discovered another one called Hoopla. So the Cincinnati Public Library uses Hoopla. And
That sounds so weird. Like, come on, kids, hop on Hoopla.
Hop on Hoopla.
They're just, that's like a step away from calling it Whoopi. Like, let's make Whoopi, everybody. And
well, Hoopla is a word. Like, what's all this Hoopla?
I know, but it just sounds funny.
But so anyway, Hoopla, much like Libby, has streaming content available, not just audiobooks, though. You can check out digital books and have it forwarded to your e-reader. So if you have like Kindle or the Kindle app installed on like an iPad or a iPhone, if you will, you can also check out digital copies of movies. They don't have a great selection, but one of the things I streamed pretty recently was White Chicks. I almost said Black Chicks. I was like, hold up. Is that what it's called?
No, that is not what it's called.
White Chicks, the Wayne Brothers,
Brothers movie.
Yeah. My wife loves that movie.
My girlfriend loves the shit out of that movie.
She thinks it's hilarious.
So I watched White Chicks recently that I checked out through Hoopla. And there's a Hoopla app on Apple TV. And
cool.
Yeah, so I was able to check
what
out
what an incredible
that
sentence you just said. I checked out White Chicks on Hoopla
to stream on Apple TV. Yes.
Do they have... I wonder if you could like read digital books on your television with Hoopla on your TV.
That's a good question. And
Libby has
know.
Digital books that you can read on your phone too, by mm-hmm. the way.
Yes.
I accidentally checked those out once looking for the audiobook and I was pissed.
You got to look for the picture that is a square, not a rectangle.
Well, the way I found to navigate it is that there's a, like before you check out the book, it'll say play sample. And if it's a book, it'll say read sample.
Mm, yes.
I ignored that the first time. Why would I want to read it? It's an audiobook. Download.
That stupid app.
You're fucking stupid app. Yeah, exactly.
So another nice thing that Hoopla has over Libby is that it does not have a wait time for books. They don't have limited digital licensing. So
they're a big deal. They're in the big city.
So frequently, audiobooks, when they either if they are perennially popular like Harry Potter or newly released by a famous author, the wait list will be very, very long. So like Anthony Dare came out with the new book. He wrote All the Light We Cannot See and won all kinds of awards for it like 7 years ago or something. He just had a new book come out and I got on the wait list for that like 6 or 7 weeks ago. And I still have like 14 weeks to go before I will get the checkout on Libby. On Hoopla, it is immediate. And I jumped right in and checked out a couple of Harry Potters and that Anthony Dare book, and it's pretty badass.
So did you end up driving down and getting this straightened out to where you...
I did, yeah. I went to the Kenton County Library first and got my Kenton County Library card reopened and then took that to the Cincinnati Public Library, because if you live in like the Northern Kentucky, Covington area, if you have a Kenton County card, you can go over to Cincinnati Library and get one of their cards also. So that's what I did, and now I'm all... Because you can self-register on the Cincinnati website and use that to get on Hoopla, but it's only good for like 3 weeks and then you have to go up to actually to the library to deal with it. So that's what I dealt with the other day.
Could have just went to a bookstore, saved yourself a lot of fucking time and bought the book.
What are those?
I actually was in a Joseph Beth the other day, but and it was glorious.
Oh, really?
Still makes you want to poop.
So jealous. So jealous.
I do love a good bookstore, man. They're just
fucking Trader Joe's.
They're too greedy.
Yeah.
Too pricey. Why I got to pay $28 for this book?
I look at it as a fucking...
This ain't a 4K fan. Blu-ray.
Anyway, so that's mostly what I've been streaming is just audiobooks and stuff. So the newest big release for PS5 came out recently, which is Horizon Forbidden West.
Mm.
And it is wonderful. Mm. It is one of the best looking games I've ever seen. It has wonderful gameplay. It's like, imagine if Turok met The Witcher 3. Is what the gameplay is like, which
it
is
sounds
wonderful.
Amazing.
The story is something out of what would I compare it to?
It's a post-apocalypse.
Post-apocalypse. Yes, yeah. That sounds about right.
Essentially, there's like the it's like a bunch of tribes of human civilizations scattered across the land, but there's these machines that kind of take on the role of like your so like you would see a deer, but it's actually a robot deer or mm-hmm. something like that. And
I was just trying to come up with some kind of like film plot to compare it to. The closest I can think to come up to is like the last of like the new Planet of the Apes movies or something. You know what I mean? Where there's like the old world at this point. And there's there are people that are born after this apocalypse has already happened. Mm-hmm. So they never knew what the old world was like. And so, yeah, it's these tribes of people. Borrows heavily from like Native American culture. But it, I feel like it's pretty respectful. I don't honestly know. And mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly diverse game
narrative that I would want to stay away from. But
you guys should watch the show C on Apple TV with Jason Momoa, because that's basically the plot is... It's in the far future where everybody's primitive again. Mm-hmm. Except, so it's like
we're Horizon. Not going to watch C, Chris. Quit bringing it up.
it's Horizon if everyone was blind.
Dope. So it's like Horizon meets Bird Box.
And yes. Yes.
Yes.
My buddy's been playing it.
And Bird Box Bandersnatch.
He's really funny. And we were playing Apex and they were all talking about Horizon. And it's probably not going to be funny in the retelling. But at the time, if you know Joshy, it's funny. They were like, Joshy, have you gotten to the Forbidden West yet? And he was like, no, not yet. I've only been playing for like an hour. And then a couple hours went by and they were like, Joshy, did you get to the Forbidden West yet? And they're kind of fucking with him, right? And he's like, well, it's all forbidden. And we all started laughing. I've never played it. I don't even know why that's funny. It's just coming from him. It was.
It's all forbidden.
He changed his tune. It's all forbidden.
It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. And we assume that.
Say, I've made it all the way west. It's not forbidden. You can go there.
It's anyway, all forbidden.
Forbidden West has been phenomenal. The writing, the acting have been absolutely top notch. The side quests I would put on a level equivalent with Witcher 3, which is to say extremely fucking good and interesting.
Right.
Wonderful writing.
Did I hear you guys say that Ashley Burke was the voice actor?
Yeah. Ashley Burke. She's the annoying game tester from.
I follow her on TikTok. She's some incredible person.
She's very funny. Yeah. But yeah, she plays Aloy.
That's amazing.
But what's the Mythic Quest? That's what I was trying to come up with. But
Aloy's on like the cover of Time magazine this month, and Ashley Burke is like, "Look, Mom, I'm on the cover of Time." Sort of.
As I say, there is another actress who is the face model for Aloy. Yeah. So it's like, really, she's on there, but it's cool.
Good for her. She said sort of.
But I like Ashley Burch. Like I used to watch her YouTube videos before she was on like actual TV shows. The Hey Ash, Whatcha Playin'? Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Where it was just her and her brother futzing around in their apartment, making little skits about video games. So
I like, don't know this great. History. I didn't discover her until Mythic Quest. And now that she has TikTok, I'm getting to know her more. So she... was actually really into video games.
Mm-hmm. Yo, she's a huge gamer. Yeah.
That's awesome.
She was like around like the Bo Burnham era of YouTube. And
And then she got to play a game tester on Mythic Quest. That's cool, man.
It all comes full circle.
That's amazing.
Yep.
I love the world sometimes.
Sometimes.
So yeah, that's pretty much all I've been streaming. Oh, and the new season of South Park, season 25.
That's insane.
Is on HBO Max and it's fucking hysterical. It's so funny. Those dudes don't miss.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yes. It's
Cartman and Stan.
Wow. And Stan. They've never not
been a cow.
Yeah, it's incredible how long they've been able to retain the humor. I haven't seen it religiously since like season 10, but
they're very self-aware now, like and like kind of poke fun at themselves, but still manage to be extremely divisive and kind of cringe funny. Like they recently revealed that Tolkien, his real name is actually Tolkien, and we've been saying it wrong this whole time.
Right.
And so who's the racist one for thinking that the one black kid's name was Tolkien? It's like, you thought that my parents named me Tolkien because I'm the only black kid? What the fuck's wrong with you? It's so funny.
And it's cool that as the show gets to evolve, they get to poke fun at themselves and how humor itself has evolved. And
usually, eventually, the snake eats its tail so far that the show just dies. But they've been doing this for so long now, they are just fucking geniuses. And, like, they're able to elevate beyond it. They're incredibly gifted people. And I'm jealous of where they are.
And happy to call them friends, really. I mean, that's... I could just... No, the listeners don't know, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm just laughing because I was just thinking of a fond memory we had of them. I remember when Matt and Trey were here just last night.
For the Super Bowl. That was good of them to stop by Andy's
And they
house.
Were like, go Bengals.
Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, first off, I'm not going to get super into it, but continue to watch After Party. Go watch it, everybody. It's the best thing. It's my favorite TV show currently. Also, in the gaming world, Andy, the new update for Destiny came out. As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of that game series. One of my biggest gripes about it, though, in the past has been like the series has the best video game lore, in my opinion, of any game ever. However, you would not know that if you played the game. You have to look at all like the subtext and like the lore books that they write, and you know it's all buried in the game, and you have Apex to actively like look for it. Well, finally this season, over the past year, they've been like slowly building up. Like I think they realized that was an issue. And over the past year, they've slowly been getting better and better and better about presenting the story of this world in the actual gameplay. And with this new release that just came out, I think it's the best they've been yet. Like they've really kind of utilized cinematics in a way they've never really done it before. And it's one of those things where the gameplay is good. And like a lot of people, I think, are in agreement that this is the best Destiny gameplay wise has been ever. Which is great, but if you're just playing it as for the game, you're like, you could get into the story and kind of be like, oh, okay, I know what's going on. This is kind of neat. But if you're like me and you're an absolute nerd who eats the shit up and you've been reading all the little books and you own all the lore pieces on hardcover books that you buy off Amazon every time they release because you're just such a nerd about it. The story is so good because it's about a character that's like the Lord of Deception, and like she's the god of deceit and cunning and everything. So like everything that's happening in the game, you're like, oh my God, is that a trick? Oh my God, are we falling into a trap? Oh, is that a trick? And you're just paranoid about everything you fucking do. Cause like, oh, everything's not as it seems. So it's, I think it's really, really great. And I'm enjoying it a lot. I wish I got to play it more on the vacation I specifically took off to play, and I've barely played it. But hopefully I'll continue to play it more as time goes on. But in terms of actual media, on streaming things that you can do, I'm happy to tell you guys, because I know both of you and the listeners have been on the edge of your seat for when I would complete Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, golly.
And I'm happy to report, I finally did it. I finished all 7 seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Thank Christ.
Just in time for me. Oh, thank you. Oh, the slow clap. There we go. Oh, yes. No. The real heroes are you. But it was a fun ride. I enjoyed it. I love Captain Picard. Patrick Stewart's a legend. I could just listen to that guy talk all day. I saw a funny story of him on it's that British TV show where all the, you know, guests are on a couch and they're just sharing stories. You know what I'm talking about, Andy?
I know what you're talking about, and
I can't think of the name of that guy's show. But anyway, Patrick Stewart's on it, and he was sharing a story about how he was in a hotel room and he's like, oh, Star Trek The Next Generation's on. I haven't watched this in a while. Let me check how it's like and what it's like. And he got hooked on it in this episode that he was in, but like
Graham Norton,
thank you. That he hasn't seen in years. So he's kind of like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. I remember doing this. And then room service came up and saw that he was by himself watching himself on TV. And it was the most embarrassed he'd ever been. Love Patrick Stewart. But I finished Star Trek Next Generation just in time to start watching Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, fuck.
So there you go.
I actually did watch like the first 2 episodes of Below Decks, and it was good. And I liked it. It's very much Star Trek.
You mean Lower Decks?
Lower Decks, whatever.
Lower Decks is the porn version.
Yeah.
No, it's actually a reality TV show.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
God damn it, Steve.
Lower Decks.
But anyway, it was funny. I liked it. I don't know if I'd ever go back, and I didn't get any of the jokes, but what I saw of it, I was with 2 people that were big Trekkies, and we were trying to find something to watch during dinner. And that's what
I did go back and rewatch the 2 seasons of Lower Decks after I finished Next Generation. Because you can blow through those 2 seasons in like a day. Mm-hmm. They're really short. They're quick to get through. And it was funny because I always thought the show was really funny before, but now that I've kind of gone back and kind of immersed myself in TNG, so much of that show's jokes is based off Next Generation. So I was like, ha ha, I get that even more now. I know what character they're referencing. Neato. And then lastly, and I think Andy will like this a lot. And Chris, I think you're also interested in this. It is a show that you can stream on Apple TV Plus.
Servitude?
Severance.
Severance. That's right. That's
the
right.
Adam.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's
gorgeous.
Directed by Ben Stiller, starring Adam Scott, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, some other people. John Turturro's in it. Patricia Arquette's in it.
Dang.
It's really, really good. I've only seen the first episode, but if you don't know the basic premise of it, is these people that work for this company that, you know, that possibly shady stuff is happening at work. So they have their employees sign up to work on their, I think it's like the sixth level of the building. And what happens is on your way in the elevator, first you go through this procedure that enables you to forget your personal life when you're at work. And then the moment you leave work, you forget your life at work. And so it's these people who are kind of grappling with, like, they don't know who they are when they wake up in the office for the first time. And then really it's kind of this moral quandary, like, well, the person who's stuck at the office, they don't know life outside of it. So it's like they're trapped at the office for their whole life. Whereas, and then the person who lives in the real world is grappling with, you know, why did they choose to do this to themselves? But also, like, there's, I guess it, like, people know that's happening. Like, that's something that the world knows about. So there's this whole kind of like Scarlet Letter type situation where it's like, oh, you underwent severance? Ooh, that's kind of a morally shitty thing to do. Like, and then they get judged for it in the real world. It's really interesting. Adam Scott's the main character. The reason why he decided to go under the operation is very, like, believable. And then, like, you see him in the world talking to his, like, college professor friends, and they're just kind of being a little, you know, they're you know, the term woke is a term, but it, like, it's, they're being like not super, you know, considerate of what he's really going through, and they're talking to him like, oh, we know what you're going through, and he's like, I don't think you do. And it's really great. And as someone who loves brutalist straight line composition in their films, like, every shot of this show has.
All I've seen are still frames, and I was like, wow.
It's almost like shot to shot. Like, from the next shot, you'll just hear me go, oh, yeah. And they'll switch to a white, oh, yes. That's, and they switch, stuff. Oh, look at those clean lines.
I hope I don't have to give a presentation.
later. No, it's phenomenal. The first, I'd say, 10 minutes of, if the first, after the first 10 to 15 episodes of episode one, if that doesn't hook you, I don't know what will. It's a really good premise to start the show off. But Severance on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, it sounds like something Andy will absolutely adore.
But I really want to watch it.
I'm excited to check it out. I meant to prior to this, then I didn't.
Well, what did you check out?
I checked out some things. I was also thinking comedically, you know, it made me chuckle. I feel like Steve's on the wrong side of history. He will forever be known as the guy that the weeks that Horizon Forbidden West and Elden Ring came out, he bought Destiny 2's expansion.
I just want to make a correction. I bought the expansion 6 months ago.
Dude, that's fair.
It just came out now.
It's out now. I just can't afford it.
And I honestly wouldn't play Elden Ring. So that's not my style. That's not my type of game.
I don't like the Dark Souls, but, you know, I really want to try that thing, but I'll just come over and play Andy's probably. But I did watch a ton of stuff, just to pick out a few things. I finished Peacemaker. It was a joy. I felt behind last week because I was on that spiritual media deprivation thing. But I shouldn't have done that because this was really good. That would have been way better for my soul. The finale of Peacemaker was amazing. I'm so excited for season two. And apparently he's being greenlit for some other projects outside of when you Peacemaker that are in the DC universe. James Gunn.
Okay.
Nice.
So James Gunn's going to direct season two, but also I think he's something else weird is going to be greenlit. And he likes to do underserved characters, right? So it would certainly be something like Polka Dot Man or something before it would be Batman for James Gunn. It just doesn't, people don't know. And I'm not a big comic book reader, of the superhero variety at least, but, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy were a really niche, underserved community of heroes as well until he made those movies. Like, that was a weird choice for him.
And now they're like one of the biggest
staples
of Marvel of all time. There's a video game that came out of them this year.
A really good one, I hear.
Yeah.
I'll never play it, but I hear it's neat.
Yeah, except Eidos Montreal dropped fucking Deus Ex to make that shit instead, and I'm sad because Deus Ex rocks. Anyway, that was very nerdy. Go.
Yeah. Okay.
Man, tell us how you really feel, Andy.
The only reason I knew that was a game publisher is because of Mythic Quest, because Montreal is their owner. Anywho, I did also watch The King's Man, which I've been really excited to see. I'm a big fan of Matthew Vaughn's wacky films that are also based on comic books.
Oh, that's on HBO Max now, right?
It is.
Oh, I meant to watch that this week and I forgot it was out.
I texted you and I said, Steve, it's on HBO Max.
I know what I kept forgetting because of Destiny.
So I've been really excited to see it. I didn't catch it in theaters, and it's available to stream on HBO Max. So I checked it out. It's the third installment, but it's actually a prequel in the Kingsman trilogy or the Kingsman universe. What I love about these movies, and it's been talked about by others before, you know, the first movie, the second one's trash, Golden Circle's trash. But the first movie was really, really, really good and bonkers. The tone is hilarious. It's got really inventive, stylized action. There's a lot of CG, but it looks clean. It's still beautiful. That's why I really wanted to see this movie. Like, the trailer showed a lot of goofy Rasputin moves that looked really intricately, you know, filmed. Like, the camera work's just really interesting in Matthew Vaughn's films. So I was excited. But the first one, the coolest thing is that you get to see these elegant, highly celebrated British actors doing dirty, gritty action. You know, you get Colin Firth kicking ass in his 50s. And this time they were able to do that with Ralph Fiennes. And Ralph Fiennes kicks ass. I mean, he's doing some crazy stuff.
I want to see that just for that.
It is so fun.
Is it good?
Yeah, okay. I like it. I mean, not, on the one hand, no. Like, it's it's about Rasputin and a lot of the major figures from World War One. And
is it first movie good?
No, but it's way better than Golden Circle. I would recommend it. If you liked the first one more than a little, you're going to have a good time. There's a subplot, a B plot, if you will, Andrew, that I disagree needs to exist whatsoever. I think it's terrible. And once that character dies, it's much better. Well, I mean, I guess if you know a lot about B plots, that could be. Maybe. It just depends how you interpret that statement. But all in all, I think it's a good installment. I'd watch another one. I like these. So it's kind of a origin story for the organization of the Kingsmen. And Ralph Fiennes plays a huge part in that. Had a blast with this. I also watched Uncharted in theaters. I was able to see that. Did either of you actually? I guess you would have talked about it. I always do that. I know that we all kind of meant to see it.
I always forget about things and then.
Yes, that's fair.
I watched Holes also. I forgot to bring
Holes is fire.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway. I planned on seeing it this morning actually, but.
Holes?
Yeah, I love Holes.
Old Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf. No, Uncharted. I meant to watch it today because I wanted to talk about it in this episode. But the earliest showing of it at AMC by my house was at 3:45. And I was like, well, I don't have time to watch it and then meet them for the podcast.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, the theaters are falling apart, I tell you. They don't do the old noon showings anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fine. It's fun. I think Mark Wahlberg is... just completely phoning it in. And I'm sure that you probably assume that just thinking about it. But it
doesn't
fun.
Have a mustache, I assumed so.
Yeah. Well, Tom Holland is so charming. I'm such a big fan of his, as most people are, that the movie is watchable just for that. Like, you know, you laugh when you're supposed to laugh, you chuckle at least. And, you know, the action is pretty interesting most of the time. I was hoping that because I never played the games, I'm a pariah in that regard, that I would actually enjoy the movie more because I wouldn't be worried about things that they could or should have done and didn't, Sully's or mustache. Vice versa. I don't want to comment on that because I'm trying not to. But
obviously, he's going to have a mustache.
No, I've seen him with it.
Okay, I haven't. I just assumed at some point
it's in a trailer. There's like a TV spot where it's like. He makes fun of what his mustache looks like, but it's a shitty looking mustache. It's
That's
not a Sully
a stupid
mustache
thing that they did. That makes me more mad than how bad the movie can be at times.
Yeah.
Because that scene is a post credits sequence stinger.
Oh, really?
Oh, it is? Put it in the fucking trailer.
Wow. Are you serious?
Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
It's supposed to be a really.
That's even worse.
I know.
That's something they clearly made when people were like, where's Sully's mustache? You're like, oh, fuck, we didn't know people cared about that.
Yeah, it's just a post-credit sequence.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, apparently this is supposed to be like, again, I didn't play the games, and I feel like. Anyway, I thought it would make me like the movie more, but I think not. I think what happened ultimately is that there's a bunch of inside jokes that I missed because I've never played the games. Like at one point, Tom Holland's character crawls out of the ocean and there's a guy sitting on like a lounge chair at a beach And, you know, Tom Holland has just literally jumped out of a plane and landed in the water. And the guy's like, oh, I've done that one before. And it's a very Bruce Campbell, like, I don't know who the fuck he is, but I assume he's an Uncharted guy. Like,
it's probably the dude.
The voice actor.
Is it Nolan North?
I'm guessing it's Nolan North.
I'm assuming.
He kind of looks like Bruce Campbell.
Like, okay, there you go.
A guy with, like, black hair.
Yes.
Kind of looks like
Bruce Campbell looking guy.
Kind of looks like a slightly skinnier Mayor Cranley.
99% sure that was him. Yes.
Yeah.
So again, there's a lot of stuff like that where I was like, ha ha, because I didn't play the games. But, you know, it's fun. It's fine. It's definitely worth watching. It's, in my opinion, a streamer movie. It's definitely catch it when it gets on HBO Max kind of movie. But I didn't hate it. I took my kid. He liked it a lot. So I listened to the Pirates of the Caribbean and Indiana Jones soundtrack all the way home because, oh, you like adventure? Young lad, check this out.
Oh, young boy.
That's a fucking banger.
Has he seen those movies?
He has not, but he's about to.
He'd love those.
My son, this segues into the rest of what I've been streaming. I just want to say, lastly, I'm really proud of this because this is Uncharted. It is The Goonies meets Fast and Furious, but not as cool as that sounds. That is my one-line review of Uncharted.
It's just small children constantly yelling at each other about family.
Yes, essentially. So my son's obsessed with World War II. I've said that many, many times on this podcast. And so my wife and I were talking about it, and she was like, you know, you really want to stress to him how serious it was and what really happened, especially because of his specific fascination with Germany. And I was like, he's just a kid. He's pew pew, you know, blah, blah. I like that he likes history. I really, honestly, I'm a terrible person. I would prefer if he was really into knights and Star Wars and stuff like that. He's just not. He just wants to watch old war movies and stuff, you know. Let's watch Patton, you know. Okay, you want to watch Star Wars? No, Patton.
No, I want to see him stand in front of that American flag. Talk about the enemy's entrails on their tank treads.
So I watched The Boy in the Striped Pajamas with him.
Fuck my life. Are you serious? That is such a sad movie.
I did not know that. My wife knew what it was, and she was like, you want him to learn? And I was like, sure. Have you seen this movie, Andy?
No, I'm looking
it
up. Oh,
God, that movie's
just
sad.
The picture looks fucking awful, dude. Look at that.
Yeah. So the striped pajamas are...
Two boys sitting across from each other with... there's a barbed wire fence and one of them's in prison clothes.
So the main character is a SS soldier's son. And so he's high up in the Nazi regime. And so it's hard to even talk about. So, and then he befriends his little boy befriends a Jewish boy who's in a concentration camp. But it's so heartbreaking. Because from the little boy's eyes, he doesn't know anything about the war or anything that's going on. He's just like, hey, mom, I'm going to go play with the little boy on the farm. She's like, what farm? He's like, the farm, silly. And so, but it's obviously, it's like, why do they all wear pajamas? That's a strange thing. And so it's heartbreaking and torturous. And it does not end well, as we, you know, as most of us can assume. And so that's what I did to try to like teach my son the import of the things that he's interested in. And just to make sure that he has a healthy respect. Was my intention.
What happened?
I don't want to. You mean spoil the ending of the movie?
No, I mean, when I spoil the ending of the story with your kid.
Oh, like, so at the end of the movie, the credits are rolling. I'm crying. My wife's crying. Mason's just staring at the TV. We're all three silent.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just watching the credits roll. And it was so dour. I mean, this is like, and I, you know, I'm a shared parent. So this is my day with my son. And that's what I did. And
oh my
Dad's
God.
House sucks.
Jesus Christ.
I loved him a lot, you know, after that. Like, hey, buddy, you want some food? And, you know, let's make some popcorn. Hey, come here, give me a hug. You know, and I talked to him a lot about it. Of course, I don't regret it, but I just wasn't quite sure what I was in for, I guess. I tried to be a good parent. It's not like we watched Schindler's List, right? It was.
But the lesson you think took, or at least he absorbed it in that way?
He does, but I'll be honest with you. This is going to be controversial, but it's mostly my wife that has these concerns. Because I know Mason knows a lot about World War II. It's like he prefers to talk about the Panzer tanks and things like that and the Tiger tanks and
sure.
whatever. But he actually knows like the geopolitical situations and like, you know, all the the Italians were on the Axis and, you know, he knows all that stuff. So anyway, I get her concern just to make sure, hey, Nazis, you know, you need to know exactly what all this was and. You know, don't just go to school like pew, pew, you know, which that's a fair concern.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't know that he necessarily needed that, but I don't think it hurt anything. And it just sounded way more innocent than it was.
Yeah.
The boy in the striped pajamas.
It's like, that sounds a lot like Jojo Rabbit.
Yes. And my son loves, I might be a bad parent. Mason loves Jojo Rabbit.
The movie's hysterical. That movie's great. It. That's a wonderful movie. Also sad.
Yeah. Yes. So I also watched two documentaries about filmmaking and I adore them. I've seen both of them a few times. If you guys haven't seen them, Spielberg is easy to watch. It's on HBO Max. I'm certain that Steve has seen it. I think Andy has, right?
I think so. Yeah.
That's just a fast, it's 2.5 hours and it feels like 20 minutes because I could not learn enough about these titans of film. It goes through almost every film in Steven Spielberg's filmography and all the, you know, the historical happenings of how it came about. And so Steven Spielberg was best friends with Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, Martin Scorsese, and Brian De Palma. And the five of them came up in the business together. They were all nobodies together, and then they all became legends around the same time. And so it's a fascinating tale of how they worked on one another's movies and bounced ideas back and forth. And just imagining those five legends sitting around a Thanksgiving dinner table in a modest house like, you know, mine, talking about Star Wars and stuff tickles me. I think it's fascinating. Like a lot of people might not know, many of you have probably seen this documentary because you love film or you wouldn't be listening to this. But so when George Lucas first made Star Wars, what later became Star Wars, he actually didn't have any of the action sequences filmed or anything yet. He cut old World War II action, like real footage of the war together to kind of show the idea of what he was going to do. And that's the cut that he showed Scorsese and Brian De Palma and Spielberg and them. And so they all watch it and then they're all quiet and they all go to dinner afterward. And they're all kind of like, yeah, it was cool, man. Steven Spielberg loved it. He was always kind of on the same page as Lucas. And then Brian De Palma, who directed Scarface and stuff, among many other films, he stands up and he's furious. Do you remember this story, Steve?
Vaguely.
So Brian De Palma stands up and he's like, I don't fucking get it. I don't understand. I don't like it. I don't know what's going on. It doesn't make any sense. So there's like monks in the space and they're fighting and they're why? I don't know. You have to do something, man. Here's what you do. You need a prologue that straight up sets up the situation like old school style in the beginning of the movie, like actual text. And because it's in space, you can just have it floating out into space. You can make it look cool, but it's got to read and introduce everybody to what's going on or they're not going to fucking care. I'm telling you. So that idea was Brian De Palma's, the legendary.
Wow.
The legendary Star Wars crawl. And there's so many tidbits like that in the film. Like in Jaws, the whole, like everybody puts Jaws up on this pedestal. It's a phenomenal film. And oh, it was so incredible that they hardly ever show the shark. And it's all this suspense. They couldn't
show it.
The mechanical shark literally wasn't working. And I already knew that story, but to see it like Spielberg tell it and all that. So we found some barrels and we were like, fuck it. And just, you know, oh, that's the shark. Look, the barrels are flying through the ocean. And like, it just made me giggle and think of how us three working on our movies and how shit happens and you just kind of adapt. You have to like, oh no, we've mm-hmm. been filming too long. The sun's coming up. Quick, duct tape the windows or, you know, we'll just do this. And The shutters being closed and Kevin Smith's Clerks because, you know, he had to keep them shut because so it could be anyway.
So it's nighttime.
Stuff like that. And actually working out and making the movie better. And that didn't happen in any of our movies, but that's really neat.
That's why I love older films like that, is because a lot of these directors are constrained by real life factors like that.
Yeah.
And I think that makes them that pressure of having to create something creates diamonds, you know? And whereas today a lot of filmmakers like, oh, we'll just CGI it, you know? And I feel like that kind of, I don't know, there's something missing about a lot of stuff.
For sure. That's also Spielberg and Lucas's fault.
It is.
Ironically.
It's funny that like Lucas specifically was like, so like, I'm going to make movies for artists and damn blockbusters, and they're like, and I hate
studio
moguls and studios, and he just fucking
created
made them all the money, and like he became what he hated.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can at some point just become so successful at being an indie artist that ultimately, I would do that. You know what I mean? I can come out and be as artistic as I want. Like, yeah. Hey, fuck the man. I just want to be me. But the second they offer me the opportunity to be Ruben Fleischer, or
who?
he's a director that just, you know, does a lot of he did Uncharted, like, you know,
a lot of schlock.
Yeah, it's okay. it's like that, or what's the guy who did Moonfall?
Roland Emmerich.
Yeah, if they say, hey, I'll give you $5 million to direct Moonfall, I'm fucking doing it. Yeah. I don't do it 20 times, right? All those Bruce Willis movies that I make fun of.
Bruce Willis's career,
yeah, $1 million a pop,
sure.
I'm in. So I get it. But at the same time, it's really fascinating. I love those. Anybody out there, if you're listening and you know some really good filmmaking docs that are like Spielberg, that are just that good. I know there's a really good Brian De Palma one. I watched that one as well. Just email me, because I want to watch them all. I love that shit. It's just fascinating to me how everything, because apparently, so Spielberg did Close Encounters and then he did Jaws. And those were phenomenal successes, the likes of which Hollywood had never seen. And so he became an instant legend. He was like 25 at the time. And there is a wives tale or a legend that he actually snuck onto the Universal lot as a 17-year-old kid, which is true for sure. He actually did that. He would like get off the tour bus and run away in the bathroom and hide for hours until everybody left, and then just go watch Hitchcock direct films in the corner until somebody found him and kicked him out. But the legend is that he found an empty office and set up shop and put his name on it, and nobody ever noticed or said anything. And that's how he got his start. Right. Huh. And that's probably not true, but that's the legend of Spielberg. He basically did that, though. He was just a kid. Yeah. He didn't get into film school. He just kind of started running around those studio lots until somebody was like, hey, kid, you want to direct? And, come here, say. That's how it was back then.
Got a movie about a shark?
But so he did Close Encounters and he did Jaws, which were phenomenal, but they were three times the budget that he signed the contract for, and they were three times the shooting schedule. So he had this wild reputation for going massively over schedule and over budget. He did 1941, which is a World War II comedy with like John Candy. Mm-hmm. That was a huge flop.
Yep.
And so after that, nobody would hire him because he's great. He'd probably make you a ton of money, but he might not. And he's definitely going way over budget and way over schedule. So his old buddy, George Lucas, was like, hey, man, I know you've been looking for work. I know you're a sad boy. I love you. I got this archaeologist explorer adventure movie. If you promise to do three of them, I'll let you direct the first one. But you got to do it for $20 million or I'll fucking punch you. And Spielberg's like, I think I can. I've learned a lot of lessons about the first two movie. And he says, you know, I learned a lot from going over budget of how to not do that. And so the rest
I'll
is history.
Kill you if you go over. I'll knife you. I know we're buddies and my voice makes it sound like that we're really good friends. And I'm a cuddly teddy bear, but I'll fucking ice you.
And that's how Indiana Jones was made. And I find that fascinating. I take it for granted now, but that was like the conversation. And Spielberg's cool. You know, he's worked with the same people for like 30, 40 years for the most part. John Williams is his oldest friend. And he's like, and he was really humble because he's known as this genius of filmmaking. It showed old home movies. I always think of Andy because it showed these old home movies he made when he was like 14.
Oh, they're all like war movies and stuff?
Yeah. And it was like little war short films. And he would bury 2x4s in the dirt and the sand. And so when the actor was running, he would stomp on the ends like a teeter totter and throw the dirt up. And it would look like a gunshot and it would fall as soon as they hit the board. Just these really creative practical effects solutions as a child that he would come up with that he took into his adulthood. And he was just apparently just a genius at directing CGI stuff. Like Jeff Goldblum tells the story of filming Jurassic Park. And there's no dinosaur there, obvi, right? But at the time,
what?
Nobody had to act like that at that time. Nobody was used to that shit. And Spielberg just took to it immediately. He's like, Jeff Goldblum's telling the story like, yeah, he'd come up to you. And of course, there's nothing there. And he would say, all right, smile. Now stop smiling. Now laugh, like there's nothing funny, but laugh maniacally. Now just stare into the distance. And he would just know. He would walk you through every step. You'd do the facial expression he told you. And then that's how that scene was shot, is just the dude slightly off camera telling me everything to do with my face. One take, done. He was incredible. And anyway, so I just think it's neat. Check that out. I waxed way too poetically, but I find it endlessly fucking fascinating. That's Spielberg on HBO Max. The other one you can't even find. I bought it on DVD. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about that some other time. That brings us to our main event, ranking the Batman. Steve, tell him a little bit about this music, about this film, since we don't get to include it, because I'm a schmuck. I'm uncultured swine.
You really are. So when we decided, like, hey, let's rank our favorite Batman movies, we had the discussion, like, what does that mean? Because there's so many movies that feature Batman nowadays. And we decided, you know, live action only. And then I brought up the point, like, does the 1960s Batman movie count? And none of y'all had seen it.
Correct.
So we decided to leave it off the list because neither of you had seen it, but I've seen it and I fucking love that movie.
We are what the kids call uncultured swines.
Mm-hmm. You really are.
So this is Adam West, right? It was just a film version of that famous TV show.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's Batman and Robin, his ward, Adam West and Ben Burtt. Is that the original Robin's name? I don't know. Either way, it's...
We don't fucking know.
It's the two of them facing off against several...
I think his name's Burt Ward.
Burt Ward. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's 100% what it is. What did I say, Ben?
You Burt? Said his ward, and I was like, hang on, was that a joke?
Well, Robin is Batman's ward.
Yeah,
so, true. But no, I love that movie. If you guys have never seen it, it's one of the quintessential, it's so bad, it's good movies. It's so goddamn funny. And at the time... That's 100% where they're going for. It's really cheeky and campy on purpose, and it's silly, and they know what they're doing. There's literally an extended scene of Batman holding a giant, like, bomb with, like, the wick in it, and it's huge, and he's just stumbling around a pier. Like, he's trying to throw it off the pier, but every time he tries to throw it, oh, no, there's a family of ducks. Can't throw it there. And he goes running through the crowd again. I'm going to throw it here. Oh, no, there's kids on surfboards. Oh, and he's like, oh, some days you can't get rid of a bomb. And it goes on way too long.
I've actually seen that clip.
My favorite part is have you seen the bat shark repellent scene?
I have not.
There's a scene where he's hanging off of a helicopter and a shark jumps up and like bites his leg and is like attached to his leg.
Oh Jesus.
And there's this, it's really funny because he's like trying to beat it off of him and he's like literally backhanding this fake shark and he finally yells up at Robin, who's piloting the helicopter, Robin, get me the bat shark repellent. And he just opens up a case and there's just a tube and it says bat shark repellent, because you never know when you need that when you're flying a fucking helicopter.
Sure.
It's so funny. Like, you guys have to, like, you listeners, if you partake in the stickiest of the icky, get baked. Get baked and watch the 1960s Batman. You'll thank me later. So there you go. 1960s Batman honorable mention.
Where would that have ranked? What, around what number? Just tell me.
Top four.
Easily top four.
Although I'm a weirdo. I love things that are like unabashedly and unapologetically like we're this is weird. We're trying to be silly. Okay.
I feel like,
dude, I wish I still liked weed because that sounds amazing.
It does. It does. It might even be worth a relapse just to enjoy that sweet, sweet nectar of a memory. I feel like this is going to be boring. It's kind of when I was waxing so poetically because I'm like, what are the odds that, well, I guess Steve's might throw some curveballs.
I was going to say, I feel like we all probably have the same number one, right?
I think it's objective, is it not?
Batman Forever. Totally.
Or no, so, Batman and Robin would be the number one,
let's,
right?
Let's do it this way. We'll do, let's trying to get a little creative, because I know we kind of do our ranked ones here. So just to remind everybody, what's up? There's the three Nolan films. You got Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises. And then you have the two Burton films. You got Batman and Batman Returns. Mm-hmm. Batman 1989 parentheses, I think is what it's called. And then you have the Joel Schumacher films. So you have Batman and Robin and Batman Forever. And then you have the Snyder version of Batman v Superman.
And we did not include Justice League because that's not a Batman movie.
Yeah, there's a ton of movies where Batman appears. And of course, a lot of animated
Suicide
films.
Squad would be in there.
Yeah, he shows up for a hot spell.
So I think there's going to be, I predict a unanimous number one and number eight.
Okay.
Oh, that's what I predict.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
I'm going to guess you're wrong about the second one.
But okay.
Let's, you want to start from the top? Because I feel like it's going to get more interesting to work our way down.
My number one, you want to do it that way?
Yeah.
My number one is, I wanted to be clever here, but I just can't. It's obvious to me that it is The Dark Knight is number one.
Agreed. 100%.
Agreed.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to be clever. Like, actually, this scene propels it beyond. And it doesn't.
Yeah. This movie is, not only is it a great Batman movie, it's just a hands down one of the best movies of the aughts. It's an incredible movie with incredible performances, great direction by Nolan. You know, if Heath Ledger didn't get the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, I think Aaron Eckhart should have also been nominated for that as well, because he does a great job as Harvey Dent. Yeah. In that movie. It's just an all around amazing movie.
It is. It's darn good.
I didn't know that he was playing Two-Face when I went into it as
really
in theaters. Yeah. So I was like, oh, and I realized what they were doing. And I was like, damn, didn't know Two-Face was part of this. Cause I'm not a huge Batman. Not like I like Batman, but like I didn't know Two-Face's name was Harvey Dent. Like I know it now, but I didn't.
Cause the Arkham games.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I play the shit out of the Arkham games and shit. Like I know all the side characters and shit now, but at the time, when I was watching that movie, I realized halfway through that was going to be Two-Face. I was like, oh, shit.
So when he gets some, obviously, spoilers for these movies, I'm sure. But they're all older movies, so fuck you. But like, so when that happened, when he got burnt and he became, he got the second face. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking when you watched that?
Dude, I was blown away. Well, especially when they reveal his face and like he turns to yell at a Joker, I think. Isn't that when they reveal his face?
Fully, yeah. I think there's a scene with Gary Oldman before that, but I don't think they show it completely. They would cut away from it.
Well, first off, I was just blown away by the visual effects of it because, like, going from, like, Tommy Lee Jones to that, like, holy shit. But, yeah, no, I realized partway through that he was, I think it was, like, when he was laying in the gas or whatever, like, and, like, before his face started to burn, I was like, oh, my God, that's going to be Two-Face. And, like, I don't know. I was probably that guy that, like, I turned over to whoever I was with, like, that's going to be Two-Face. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Good call.
Yeah, right. What? No way.
He told us his name the whole time.
Anyway, it blew me away. And that movie's just fucking amazing. It's got fucking Gary Oldman in it. You know what I mean? And, like, he's, like, the least important part of that movie. And that's crazy, right?
You know, I just rewatched The Professional. And Leon the Professional.
Oh, he's crazy in that.
Yeah, he's so good. He's such a gem. Such a gem.
I still watch the final sometimes when I just want to remind myself of what like a good tense scene with three great actors can be. I'll pull up that final scene in The Dark Knight where Harvey Dent has Gary Oldman's kid and they're like talking about why did the Joker choose you? And it's like, you're the best of us. I lost everything. Like,
I thought you were going to say that's how nerdy I am. Yeah. Because I was on a Gary Oldman kick and you were talking about the three great actors. And I thought you were going to bring up the scene in Prisoner of Azkaban where you're laughing, but it's a phenomenal scene. It's Alan Rickman, Gary Oldman. And then they discover, Wormtail?
Uh-huh.
They discover Wormtail for the first time. And it's blocked brilliantly. All the performances are phenomenal. And that's a really good Gary Oldman scene, in my opinion,
I've
sir.
I've done my waiting 12 years of it.
Dude, good. It's so good.
It's good.
It's a good scene.
You got to check it out.
And then, of course, obviously, Heath Ledger is just amazing in it.
Yeah, goes without saying. Awarded Best Actor posthumously for his performance as the Joker. Dark Knight, hands down, got to be the best Batman. And then...
Now it gets interesting.
Say, now it's going to diverge, for sure.
My number two is Batman Begins.
So is mine.
All right. See, I didn't I don't think it should diverge. Steve?
Same.
All right. I knew it. Because, my opinion, There is no legitimate MCU without Batman Begins. And I know that doesn't make sense on face value, but in, this is my recollection. At this time, we had a handful of superhero movies in the 90s and stuff. Superman Returns is good, but most people wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And you had X-Men was like, oh, that was pretty neat. It was actually pretty good, right? But Spider-Man was out. I was like, oh, that's decent. But it's Batman Begins where Nolan decided to do this. Like, can I fucking make it believable that a man would become Batman?
Realistic.
Can I make that gritty and just like.
Super realism.
Ooh. Up top, Andy.
Nailed it.
And Nolan succeeded, I think, in that with Batman Begins. Because I remember watching this as a young lad, just graduated high school or whatever. Like, holy shit, this is fucking good. This is a movie. Like, this isn't just neat. This is like Rocket Man, you know, like I like the Rocketeer, but like that's not like believable. Mm-hmm. This is wow. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that became possible because of Batman Begins. That's why I rate it as number two.
I agree. And also, again, a fucking phenomenal cast, except for Katie Holmes. Liam Neeson.
Damn, throwing shade on Katie.
She sucks. She's always sucked. She always will suck. But we getting to see like the ninja Batman was badass. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ken Watanabe was briefly in it as the faux. What's his name? Liam Neeson turned out to be.
Oh, Liam Neeson. Yeah.
Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul, yeah. I thought you said Ken Watanabe was.
Ken Watanabe was like the fake Ra's al Ghul in the beginning when they're in the ninja temple. Right. Yeah.
I was going to say Liam Neeson is taken. He's Ra's al Ghul. Yeah. He's awesome. He's done a lot of B movies ever since he did Taken, but he's a phenomenal actor. Forever Qui-Gon. Yeah. Yeah. I love Batman Begins. And fun fact, Cillian Murphy wanted to be Batman.
It would have been good.
It's Cillian Murphy wanted to be Batman. And he auditioned and did not get it. But they made him Scarecrow instead. So
is Tom Wilkinson in that movie as well as the Falcone crime lord?
Yes.
Yeah. That movie's got like a bonkers cast minus Katie Holmes.
Yeah, I'm glad that they replaced her with Maggie Gyllenhaal. But I mean, Katie Holmes had her time in the early aughts, late 90s. It just didn't work out.
I don't dislike Katie Holmes the way that Andy seems to.
I mean, just has she done anything?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Scientology is following her around, making her life a mess. So
for sure. For sure.
My number three, this is where we will diverge. My number three is Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. Yeah, we diverged.
I really think that this film is better than people think it is. I know that sounds like arrogant and elitist. But just coming off of the high, perhaps, of Dark Knight, and some choices that I think grow on you over time, like Tom Hardy's Bane, as they have grown on me.
Oh, I loved him from the offset.
From Jump, yeah, right?
He's the best part of that movie.
I don't like...
And I say that like actually enjoying him. I'm not saying like, oh, he's the best part and it sucks.
I'm not a huge fan of Anne Hathaway's Catwoman.
No, I hate it.
Yes.
Yep.
I was being diplomatic.
Not a big fan either.
But what is your guys'? Is this where Batman Returns comes in or something?
No, this is where the original Batman comes in for me. Tim Burton's Batman.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's just a joy. It has that same kind of seminal feel to it that Batman Begins does, at least for me. And like, obviously the score is fucking wonderful.
Danny Elfman knocks it out of the park.
And Michael Keaton is, to many people, the quintessential Batman.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. I think he is the quintessential Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
They just didn't have the technology. I rewatched it like a couple months ago, and it's really funny when they do the action scenes. They have to do the close-ups with just the fist coming across the screen, and then a guy falling over a balcony, and then like him frozen in his 80s suit that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You can't see me, listeners, but I'm trying to look different directions without moving my neck because that's the ability that he had. And you can tell, right? So he doesn't look like he could fight crime. He looks like he can barely walk. So they do a lot of cuts, and, you know, the technology is like he'll fire the grapple gun and then they'll show the close up of the grapple gun landing. You know, and so that's just the technological achievements of over time.
You should be a Foley artist, dude. That was beautiful. I just love the story. I think And I might get this some of the details incorrect, but the story is like the famous like I'm Batman scene. Like he was supposed to say like I am the knight or I am the lord of the night or something like that. And Michael Keaton literally was the one who said, why don't I just tell him I'm Batman? Yeah, that's awesome.
And like the set design is classic, like Tim Burton shit. Like it's just wild. It's a really good movie. I haven't watched it in a long time, but it's always had a special place in my heart.
The original Batman is my number five. Steve, what is your number four?
Well, my number three, was,
number three rather.
My number three was Batman Returns. So I went Returns. Okay. So I put, so the original Batman is my number four. Okay. And I put Returns above it because I feel like Returns does everything that the original Batman does well, better. It also features far less Prince, which nothing against Prince. It just, I don't feel like that fits Batman.
I do love Jack Nicholson's Joker. Yes. But I think Michelle Pfeiffer, is the icon of the 80s Batman. Would you agree?
She's definitely the best out of all of them, where she looks the part. When I think of like movie Catwoman, it's Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie. I don't think anyone's come even close to her interpretation of the character. And like that scene where she's like whipping heads off of the,
that's real.
She fucking did that. That's so dope. Badass. And then, you know, Danny DeVito is so grotesque as the Penguin. It's such an interesting character.
Freak me out when I was a kid. Mm-hmm.
And I love that he has an army of actual penguins that have like rockets strapped to their back.
That's so ridiculous. I want sharks with freaking laser beams. That's what it reminds me of. I agree. This was my number four.
Yeah.
Batman Returns. I actually think Zoe Kravitz is going to give her a run for her money. I've got a lot of faith.
Time will tell.
That's my girl.
Time will tell.
Got a lot of faith.
I still need to go back and watch High Fidelity. I know that's neither here nor there, but still.
Hey, man. It's here. It's just not there. Man.
Okay. So we're on to our number fours now. Steve, you said that the Batman, or not the Batman, but Batman.
Yeah, the original Michael Keaton Batman is my number four. It's still a lovely movie, but like I said, it just loses out number three because of a couple of weird, you know,
Returns was your three.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what is your number four?
My four is Batman Returns.
Okay.
So it's just basically the same as Steve's, but I put Dark Knight Rises up in there. I squeezed it up in there.
Okay. So this is where we're probably going to super diverge.
Your number four?
My number four, Batman Forever.
Hey, man, that's my number six. It's right below the original Batman.
I just fucking love that movie. I mean, whichever Batman movie had McDonald's mugs, glass mugs.
That's remember all those you mugs? Needed. Yeah,
they actually, were so badass.
I loved that movie.
Was that the Batmobile that had the sweet blue lights around the engine?
So
it was like blue? It was one of those. One of the Schumacher
Mobiles. I think that one might have been Batman and Robin because Robin steals the Batmobile and is driving it around
that's
town.
That's right.
And
yeah.
There's like, some, you're not the Batman. You're the Bat Boy.
There's a guy on TikTok that does this hilarious series, mostly from these two films, the Joel Schumacher ones, that it's called Where Did Batman Get That? And he's just voiceovering the like a full 3 minute clip of all the little gadgets that pop out of their shoes and their hands and shit. And he's like, that's like a 7-inch blade. How the fuck was that in his wrist? We saw his wrist in this earlier scene. Where the fuck did Batman get that? And, you know, it's absurd, right? But it's fun. I like Val Kilmer as Batman a lot.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a huge crush on Alicia Silverstone as a kid. And so that was fun.
But she's not in Forever, is she?
She's in Batman and Robin.
Yes.
Nicole Kidman was in Forever.
Yes.
She's the love interest, right?
Correct.
It's Poison Ivy, right? No, that's Uma Thurman later. Yeah. Uma Thurman. Yeah.
No, she was
I forgot Nicole Kidman
Katie
was in
Vick,
it.
Or not Katie Vick. Katie Vale. Something Vale.
I don't remember.
She's like a reporter, I think, in the Batman.
Vicky Vale?
Vicky Vale. I was going to say, no, in comic books, it'd be a V.
Vicky Vale. Yeah, it's Vicky Vale. You're right.
But
Katie Vick is a really notorious wrestling character that is, if anyone watches wrestling and knows Katie Vick, they are laughing right now because that is horrid.
Any K-Fabulous radio fans listening will get a chuckle.
Go on the K-Fabulous, I don't know if it exists anymore. We had a Facebook page where I made someone watch that segment, the Katie Vick segment, and it's maybe the funniest thing I've ever put onto video before because it's this poor girl going, what is happening? What is happening? Why are we
I've
doing
seen
this?
That video. That is funny.
But I love Jim Carrey as the Joker. I think that he...
Riddler.
or I'm sorry, the Riddler. Yes. I think that he was just perfectly cast and he was bizarre and weird. I hate Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face so much. But like, it's also like got this fun quirk to it where he's like turning side to side, facing the camera and shit. And I love his like, again, the set design in pretty much every Batman movie fucking rocks. Remember his lair where he's got like the dominatrix on his burn side and like the little angel woman on the other side? Like, it's so weird. I love it.
I love it. I love the whole color palette. Of the Joel Schumacher movies is amazing. It's especially like the little neon gangs that they fight. Do you remember that scene in Batman and Robin? They fight these like neon skeleton gangs. I just think that's neat. It's like Gotham's this fucking Mad Max crazy place and the people like Batman running around exist.
On rollerblades.
And so I like that about it. And they might just be kids movies, which is why I liked them so much as a kid. But I agree with you, Andy. Steve, what is your, I don't know what number I'm like. I keep jumping around. So
that one was my number four, and we already got Steve's
four. What's your four?
My four was Batman Returns.
Okay, so we're on to five?
Yeah. My five is Batman, the original 1989.
My number five is Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. Also my number
five. It is hands down my least favorite Nolan one by a significant margin. I actually do not like this movie yet, but I put it above the other ones because I feel like it's better filmmaking than the other ones. But I just think, like, a lot of people tell me, like, oh, like Alex, he's been on the show. We had a brief.
I wanted him as a guest on this show because he could defend that.
Because he loves Dark Knight Rises, and he was trying to tell me, like, oh, have you seen it recently? It actually ages pretty well, much better than I. And I was like, honestly, yeah, I watched it 3 months ago. I still hate it.
Wow.
I just don't think it's constructed well. There's a lot of really weird plot holes in that movie that just kind of ruin the ending for me. I don't like Anne Hathaway as Catwoman.
Marion Cotillard crushes it, though.
Is she better than Halle Berry?
Yeah.
The Talia al Ghul.
Yeah. But her death scene is absurd.
It is.
Have you watched it recently?
No.
She's just like straight like, and everybody in that scene is an Oscar winning actor.
All right.
All three of them. And there's just, she's terrible.
But I do like about that movie is I honestly do think, Bane is great, even though like the voice is a meme at this point, but
you merely adapted the darkness. I was born to it.
In it.
Molded by it. That would be very dangerous for you.
Painful. That was great. That was great.
No, painful.
He's fantastic. Like the voice is like unique for sure. And you can definitely make fun of it, but like he's still like a menacing presence, and like the lines of dialogue he has is great.
They use that timbre, that voice in the Harley Quinn cartoon. It ruins it for me though, because he's so fucking funny.
Why don't I get a chair? what are we doing? You stole my chicken. I ordered the chicken. You asked for the beef.
Have you seen that yet, Andy?
Oh, yeah. I watched like the first season. It's fucking so hysterical. Good.
Is it the second season where they go to Bane's like rehab and it's the pit? And he's like, welcome to the pit. We will have arts and crafts at 4.
The pit.
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises. Not a fan of it. It's the one I watched the least.
But you respect it.
That opening scene, though, where they have the plane jacking and like turn it upside down and the wings get ripped off. Aidan Gillen's like, why do you wear the mask and shit like that? Or who is Bane? Why does he wear the mask? And dude, that opening scene, like, I got so, because I was so high. Everybody was coming off the high of the Dark Knight. When Dark Knight Rises comes out, they're like, oh my fucking God, let's go. And that opening scene, I'm like, they're doing it. They're doing it, guys. Like, they're topping it. And they didn't, obviously. Like, they're doing ultimately. It. But like in the
And
theater,
you gotta remember,
like,
too, I mean, obviously Heath Ledger was an unexpected tragedy. And we can only imagine what would have transpired with more of the Joker and
the original script was. He for sure would have been Cillian Murphy's role in that movie. He would have been the judge character.
Yeah.
That screams Joker to me.
And would have been a much bigger part, I would assume.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, they adapted and did what they could. And it is what it is at this point. So where are we at now? Number six?
Something like that.
My number six, as I said, is Batman Forever. Andy, what's your number six?
Did Andy give his number five?
My five was also Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, okay.
My number six is Batman Returns. Just I haven't seen it in a very long time. So sure. I mean, I remember it being weird and funny and Danny DeVito creeping me out as a kid.
There's a lot of penguins, man.
I remember he had like an umbrella gun or something.
Oh, 100% had his umbrella gun. Did.
That's the penguins move, baby.
It's iconic. What's your number six, Steve?
My number six is Batman Forever.
Damn, the disrespect.
Hey, you know, of all the Schumacher ones, I think that one's the best. The thing that Schumacher's movies to me, like the reason why they're so much lower is because it becomes just like the showcase of the villains. Like when you think of those movies, you don't remember Batman or what he's doing or, you know,
or which actor played him.
You remember, oh, Forever. Oh, that's the one with Jim Carrey's the dope ass Joker. And Tommy Lee Jones is also Riddler. Yeah. But he's basically the Joker, right? He's basically the Joker just saying, riddle me this, riddle me that.
he's the Joker who loves queries.
And the other behind the scenes story about that movie that bums me out is, have you heard this, Andy, where Jim Carrey was like so excited to be working with Tommy Lee Jones? Because I guess he thought Tommy Lee Jones was like an inspiration. He's like, oh, that's a great actor. I'm so excited to be working so much with him.
Shit all over him.
And Tommy Lee Jones, like, he went over to him and said basically that I'm so excited to work with you. I respect you so much. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, you're a clown and I don't respect anything you do. And like was such a just colossal dick to him from the jump. And it bums me out because it's like, Tommy Lee Jones, you ain't really doing that. You're just trying to out carry Jim Carrey in that movie. That's basically what Two-Face is. It's just, I'm also crazy. And it's two characters that are just trying to out crazy each other the whole time. But
speaking of big bummers that make you sad, have you guys heard? No, I'm just kidding.
Of the boy in the striped pajamas. Oh, no.
So I was reading on Twitter the other day. It's a very sad story. Charlie Cox. Have you seen this? He went to.
Oh, yeah.
He went to the Spider-Man No Way Home premiere. And he was so excited to see himself and he was like hidden and he wanted to see what the audience would do when he was confirmed to be in the film. When he was finally revealed, would they scream and shout and clap and glee as they did in my theater?
And mine. They were, and mine.
It was dead silent.
Oh,
his brutal. Wife was filming him when it was about to happen to see his reaction to their reaction. And there was nothing. He told this story and I got so mad at that invisible crowd in my mind. And
yeah.
He seems like such a sweet man.
He's an angel.
I wanted to defend him. I'm like tweeting furiously. I screamed. We all scream for ice cream and Charlie Cox.
Someone on Twitter was like, you better cheer for Charlie Cox.
Yeah.
Charlie Cox is a saint.
For sure.
I can't believe that people didn't. That was the premiere.
Yes.
And nobody reacted to that.
There was no reaction.
Nuts. Yeah. Cause I saw Spider-Man Homecoming. What is it?
No Way Home.
I saw No Way Home three times in the theater and all three times got a reaction.
Wow.
I love that Andy said something home as a joke in the first episode that I wasn't on. And ever since then, Steve has never known the fucking title, even though Steve was like offended that Andy did that.
It's a terrible title. That's why I can't remember it, because it's a terrible title structure.
Why do you sound like the kid from the Goonies right now?
Because that's what this movie does to me.
I can't even do it because it's rude. Okay. What is our number seven? Okay. I remember at the beginning I said we would all have the same number one and the same number eight. Okay. So your number seven will reveal if I am correct. Andy, what is your seven?
This is Batman v Superman.
I was wrong. I thought we would all rank that dead last. Steve? Did you put that in there because it's got better special effects than Batman and Robin?
No, I put Batman and Robin as my
number. Yeah! Because fuck Batman v Superman.
You know what's fucked up is I actually have Batman and Robin above it, and then I looked at it, and when you asked me just now, I changed my mind.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, you know what? It kind of has a bad rap, but it's not that bad.
It's bad.
It's bad.
So I watched I watched it recently, the Ultimate Edition, purely because everybody said like it's an editing issue. Like check out the director's cut, and I was like, oh really? Okay, it's fucking bad.
Damn. Okay,
Martha.
So it came down to either of those two movies. One was going to be last.
Yeah.
And I thought, which one am I more likely to watch and have a good time watching?
Exactly.
It's Batman and Robin every time. Because Batman vs. Superman is so fucking serious and full of itself. And it's so colorless and blah. And Jesse Eisenberg's doing something with his hair.
I hated him in that movie. And I really, really like him. Typically.
Yeah.
Like I've been wanting to rewatch Now You See Me a bunch.
I really want to rewatch Batman and Robin because like I feel like all of my 90s Batman memories are primarily
chill out.
Now I remember the ice like
puns. Oh, I fucking love it.
There's the ice puns. There's the ice skating fight, which is badass.
The nipples on the bat suit.
It was that only in Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, bat okay.
Bat nipples.
Does Batman, is it Forever or Batman Robin where he has the bat visa? It's Batman and Robin. He has the bat visa and goes never leave home without it. And it's like the most blatant product placement ever.
It's awesome.
Never leave home without it. Wink.
But I'm sorry. He says never leave the cave without it. That's what he says.
Jesus. God damn it. I remember Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy doing the poison kiss. And his big reveal was that he had like
fake lips,
antidote chapstick on and he peels it off like, ha! I knew I was going to make out with you. I was wearing lip condoms.
Never leave the cave without them.
Yeah, and it's a Trojan symbol.
I remember that movie also had the, there was some weird band that made a Poison Ivy song on the spot when she enters the like Gotham philanthropy thing. It was like Poison Ivy. And there's this, and everyone's just looking at her in love, like, oh, she's so beautiful. It's such a weird movie.
You know what? I have to say, though, to defend myself in putting Batman v Superman above it, even though, like, in my actual list, I have Batman v Superman last. I changed my mind. Ben Affleck is a really good Bruce Wayne.
In that movie, yes.
In that movie, at mm-hmm. least. Like, fuck Snyder Cut.
And Justice League, he's not.
Justice League and all of that. In this, it's really good. And I do kind of like the dynamic that they went for, like, that he is this protector of the city that sees this dude as an alien invader, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I like what they were going for, but it is, like, a colorless, heartless, you know, terrible fucking film, and I just genuinely don't like Zack Snyder movies in general, except for Sucker Punch. That movie's badass.
Zack Snyder must be stopped.
300?
300.
300's pretty... I haven't watched that in a long time.
So Watchmen?
No.
I like
Watchmen. Now that I've read the book, the show's not as great.
Zack Snyder's Although I feel Justice like
it
League.
Has the better ending. It's terrible.
It's phenomenal.
Wait, what?
Zack Snyder's Justice League is a phenomenal film.
Oh. I don't think that movie actually exists.
I have it on Blu-ray.
Hey, did Zack Snyder's Justice League get nominated for any Oscars this year?
I don't think so.
That was a joke.
But Don't Look Up is eligible for Best Picture.
Which, I mean, I like that movie, but that is...
That's crazy.
Wild.
That's bonkers. And Tick, Tick, Boom is not. That's just insane.
And Andrew Garfield's not nominated for Best Actor?
He is.
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I was led
I hope he wins. Astray. I think Will Smith deserves it, but I would love it if Andrew Garfield won. Mm-hmm. Andy Hoosel. So that's our Batman rankings. I was pretty much right. Andy kind of backed out at the last second, but we did put the same eight and the same number one as predicted. Yeah. I curveballed.
Yeah. And Lego Batman.
You lied. That's what you did.
Lego Batman would have been number one.
Mr. President.
So here, let's do this. We'll end the show with this. I'm curious where you guys think. Where do you think on that list, the Batman, where do you predict it will land? That's on your Batman rankings.
I'm going to guess.
I don't even have to look.
I'm going to guess it is going to land around number three.
Number three. So below Batman Begins and Dark Knight for you.
Correct.
Steven?
Same, three or four.
Okay.
There's a couple things in the trailer that make me a little like, ooh, I hope that doesn't go that way that I'm thinking it's going, but we'll see.
I got a hot take here.
Number one?
I think it'll be number one. Which is saying a lot.
That is saying a shitload.
I have complete faith in Matt Reeves. I love...
For people who don't know, what's Matt Reeves' pedigree?
Well, he's most famous for his Dawn and War of the Planet of the Apes adaptations. He did 2 and 3 of the Planet of the Apes trilogy.
The two best ones.
And they're not just the best ones, because that makes it sound like for a Planet of the Apes movie, it's fire.
But they're great movies.
They're phenomenal. They're phenomenal films to the point where I was shooketh, like, because I had no expectation that they would be that good. And I think his sensibility with this particular story, meaning Batman, is going to be well received, and it's going to fit perfectly with his sensibilities. And he has said that this is a really sad Batman movie. And of course, all the critics that are so sick of Snyder are like, fucking kill me. But honestly, the character of Batman is tragic, dark, sad story. He's an unhappy, unfulfilled hero who's tortured. And it is what it is. If you're a Batman fan, you know that. And it's never going to be as fun as Spider-Man. It just ain't going to be.
No.
Or it's not true to the character. And so I'm okay with that. I think Robert Pattinson is the best cast choice for something like that. And this is, again, this is a year one Batman. So this is or year two, let's say. So he doesn't know how to pull his punches yet. He goes too far. He's going to make immoral decisions and choices. He's still coming into his own. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. Colin Farrell looks like he's having a fucking blast as the Penguin. And that's a casting choice. He looks
completely different, which...
Yeah, that's a casting choice that blew my mind.
Yeah, when someone told me, oh, see that? That's Colin Farrell. I was like, bullshit. No way.
So, with that being said...
Did you name drop Paul Dano yet? Because...
Yeah, Paul Dano? I mean, yeah, he's a... No, I did not, but that's a huge factor, right? Yeah. The Riddler. And I think the Riddler's an interesting character. They're doing some weird things, but this looks like Arkham Knight the movie to me. The way the color palette and the way the characters act and look... And I am fucking all about that because I love those games. I think that is the most, source material accurate picture of these characters that's ever been put into any other medium is the Arkham game series. And I'm really, really excited to see it. I got my premiere night tickets with Andy. And I think I think it'll be number one. That's my
I hope move, it is, man.
Right. I mean, we all hope it succeeds, of course.
Like, nobody's going to like, well, that's not true. There are chuds out there that are like, fuck that movie. I hope it fails.
Yeah, there's a lot of Marvel fanboys already. Yeah.
Release the Snyder Cut again.
Again. I want to see it again. It's out. Just buy the Blu-ray. No.
No. Do it again. Zack Snyder, for whatever reason, we are beholden to this.
Recut it. I'm really excited. I think that wraps up our show, right? Right?
Give or take, I suppose.
All right. That's all the time we have for this week. My name is Chris.
Mr. President.
My name's Andy.
And I'm Batman.
My name is Mr. President. And this was Streaming Things.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.